Welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show, a very distinctive podcast. I'm Yael Teagle.
And I'm Felicia Michelle. Yael, woo! It's loud out here. Why are we out here?
It's a little loud. We are talking season one, episode 15, The Muddy Waters Job. We have so much to talk about this episode. We have exclusive interviews. We have games, of course. Easter eggs, as always.
And questions from you guys. So let's head into the studio to talk more about it and break down this episode.
This is the penultimate, the part one of the season finale.
I know, so close to the end. I love it, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't want us to end, but we had a lot to talk about.
Seriously, though, so how'd you feel about the episode?
I think this episode gave me all of the answers that I wanted. Do you remember in the first half when I told Mr. Noah Wiley that I wanted the answers about Harry's daughter? I wanted to know who she was, who's the baby mama, what's the situation, and you know what?
You got all that.
I got all of it.
And then some.
And then some, absolutely. What did you think about this episode and about Mr. Wilson's daughter?
I mean, it was great to finally see more of Harry personally, like learn more of his personal back history and his story. Wasn't surprised that he was married and divorced. But I say his daughter, Grace, did an amazing job. And in real life, that's his baby, too. I know he was probably like, that's my baby. I'm so proud
of
her.
Well, so Grace was the ex-wife and Becky was the daughter. I absolutely love us understanding his family situation. I think seeing a divorced couple where they're all on good terms.
Co-parenting is the term.
Yes. I think that is so beautiful. And something you don't see often on TV.
Or in real life.
Or in real life, but definitely not on TV.
I mean, it brings, because it's a different level of drama. It can add to, like, a storyline, so, you know, that it's a weird space that you're in. There's, like, some points of contention. But there wasn't any for Harry and Grace until.
Yeah. I think that it was a really interesting way to tell this story because you, as a viewer, you watch it and you go, Harry is not going after this guy. He, like, wants us to help this guy. He thinks that this guy is a good guy. This is Ethan Bradford. He's an oil guy. And he...
The face of good oil.
I don't think so. But, so Gulf Petrol is this company that Ethan is the spokesperson, face of, you know, is supposed to be the one making them look better. I absolutely love when Harry tries to offer us this job and Brianna is like, no.
She knew. Like, she called it. She was like, there's not anyone in oil who is good. Like, she's like, she can't believe that someone who has that much money, that much power in that industry could ever, like, really be 100% a good person. Harry's like, no, it's a good guy. Like, he's has my whole family now. Like, I've learned to trust him, and now you're making me not trust him.
Right. I really do love that we have that side of Harry who wants to believe that this guy's good because, you know, it's nice to see Harry in this different way, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's how we even get to see him with his daughters. She's like, I'm really worried about this thing. First off, let's remember, little girl sneaking out to talk to a boy, okay? All right? And I was like, I'm not mad at you because as a teenager, I think I did the same thing.
I was like, why are you mad?
But she just did such a normal teenage thing. And, you know, it's crazy because, you know, we vilify the guy who's outside the house initially. I know I did. And I was like, you horrible creep. You're like creeping on this girl and grabbed her. But really, it's like, no, she's about to blow my cover. And I have to take these pictures. And I'm trying to do this because there's no one who can help and gather this information.
Right. I think that twist was such a fun surprise because it was unexpected.
Totally unexpected.
Because you're right. You do. Immediately, you're like, this man is outside their house taking photos. He's the bad guy.
Hey, you! Stop! Calling the cops!
I absolutely love
that. Which I don't think is a horrible assumption. I think it's pretty safe assumption.
That's a fair assumption. I think it's great. I just love the way that this episode really turned, you know, it turned everybody on their head. And I like that.
What I didn't like was I didn't appreciate how Grace responded when she was extended grace about what's actually happening.
Yes.
Because even if you haven't been with somebody, but like y'all have like a child together, y'all were married at one point, you don't have any issues. Why all of a sudden would he bring issues to you? Why right. all of a sudden would he start drama out of nowhere when he's on this, whether or not she knows it, he's on this road to bettering himself and being a better version of himself. So why would you? And he took convincing, like he took major convincing, yes. and then bringing it to her. I thought he did it in a way that was really like respectful and loving. But she was not receiving any of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's so odd that she would see this person who wasn't necessarily trying to get back together, but was trying to point out that you're in bed with someone evil, and she was like, "Well, I am." And that, I think, was eye-opening to him because he always assumed that, you know, she was with people who thought they were doing the right thing. Because Harry did, again. He always thought he was being fair. He was staying out of it. He wasn't picking a side. So he thought he was doing an okay thing. And when he realized that he wasn't, you know, he joined our team. But we have this guy, Ethan, who Harry thinks, okay, she thinks that he's doing the right thing.
He's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. But turns out he knows that he's bad.
What did you think was going to happen? I was going to leave him and come running back to you?
That's not fair.
Ethan takes care of me. He's there for me. More than you ever were.
Okay, so this is like brings me to another point. I have a hard time in real life situations when I see powerful people, I won't just say men or women, but powerful people do horrible things mm-hmm. and their partners go, I don't know. Like, how don't you know? How don't you know? You wake up, go to sleep, you like with this person, you know, their mood, like you've been with them for some time. You know, they're clearly very comfortable in this house together. You know, this seems like it's, I can only speculate that it's like far out from after the time they've been divorced. So there's been some time that's gone by. You're with this person. How do you not know?
It's, I would say it's either willful ignorance. Mm. Like, I don't want to know. Or
I don't care.
I mean, or yeah, I guess. I mean, or you're just not picking. You're not paying attention.
Oh, one thing this episode, one of my favorite lifts, the cell phone lift with the tray. I love a server stealing someone's cell phone. Yeah, we saw that. You know, he grabbed it. He's like, "Look, where's my?
Yeah,
where's my phone? No, we need access to that phone, buddy."
Right.
And Harry still was like not trying to believe it even then.
Yeah, Harry, I think, you know, really wanted to believe this was a good guy because he's the guy taking care of his family.
That is very true.
Let's talk about the oil rig, because that was an adventure.
They threw a baby shower.
They threw a bit. First of all, I love it when our team has to communicate in code because there are other people like in the Unwell job when Harry says that Brianna did what they asked. I was like, there's the code. And here, when she's like, the baby's coming, I was all about it. This was such a fun twist. And then the baby shower. It's so sweet that this team, you know, this team of people on the oil rig were like, this, you're one of us. And we may not know you because no one there knew him.
Not at all.
Because it was his first day. And they were like, but your family, here's a baby shower with whatever we could come up with right now.
That's really sweet.
It was so sweet.
And so necessary. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, haha, like that's like a cute like thing or whatever. But it was necessary to the ending for us as an audience to really be upset about it,
yes.
to be hurt, even depending upon what your empathy level is, to be hurt, to
right.
be like up in arms.
Yeah.
We needed to be as invested as possible. And that was a very quick way. Because first off, like when someone like you don't know, like get you like a birthday gift or like something, you're like, oh my God, like you don't even, that was so nice. You didn't have to do that. That was so loving. That was, wow, what a.
They threw a baby shower.
And it was a decent baby shower for an oil rig.
For an oil rig, they used whatever was available. And I loved it.
That's just, yeah, sad.
I also really enjoyed how much Parker wanted to do the role she was there. She was like, I want to do this job.
That was so, when she put the mask on him, she's like, no, just immediately go there. Just don't talk to anybody.
A piece of paper in your mouth. If it turns yellow, don't worry. It's just a minor flu. But if it turns red.
What is it?
Waxamaxa waxin virus is the most contagious one.
You're gonna have to isolate in the infirmary. Look, put this mask on. Do not open your mouth, all right? Not until I get your fever down and I vaccinate you.
But I can't leave the
control. I said don't open your mouth! Do you want to kill me? Listen, don't speak to anyone. I will find someone to come here and take your place, all right? Now, go, go!
When I thought about, I was like, is this like a little take on like what we're actually going through, like with the mask on and whatnot? No, that's not happening in the universe of Leverage Redemption, but in obviously in our universe,
yeah,
that is something that we're dealing with still.
I was like, masks, I'm familiar. I also really enjoyed the solution at the end of how they got the data, because the data was corrupt. They had no way to get it to them. They were like, but we do have a feed of what is literally happening. And I think that that's such a clever way to present it, to just put it up on the website. It's much easier to do it that way. What did you think about that? How did you think they were going to get the reveal or win the case?
Well, first off, obviously, we're going after this data. And I'm like, okay, yeah, because, right, like your normal brain, like, okay, yeah, they might corrupt the data when it's given to other people,
right?
But if that's their data that they're collecting for themselves, obviously, it'll be correct, especially if it's coming from the source, which is this oil rig. And it's like, no, we're actually just corrupting this from the gate because we know that this is a problem. We know that this is wrong. And the fact that this, they really thought they would get away with it, too. Like, how embarrassing. See, I told you I like an embarrassing moment. How embarrassing for you to lie under oath in front of a whole bunch of people, and there's a live stream of you literally killing the planet that we all have to live in.
Yeah. I liked the court case. I liked I do like a law show. That is true.
Yeah, I do love a law show.
So I like that we get to see Harry in court. You know, he is our lawyer. And I love that we got to see Sophie as this. Look, when she comes in and threatens a company by being a consultant, like an efficiency expert, that is so fun. Because efficiency experts,
their job is to
terrify you.
Terrify you and to save money and to be as efficient as possible. That's what their job is.
People are getting fired when an efficiency expert comes in.
That head lawyer said, what are you doing here? No, we have everything covered. We have, oh, are you sure about that? Like, she just did such a good job at slipping doubt and really getting their head thrown off a little bit, because no one wants to lose their job.
Right.
At all. Especially if someone's like on a high power case, because it's part of your reputation. You don't want to be like, oh, I got cut. Like, well, if you got cut from there, why do we want you here?
Yeah. This was such a great episode, and it really sets up the season finale. And we will talk more about this episode when we return. Don't go anywhere.
We're here with Leverage Redemption co-creator and consulting producer Chris Downey. We're going to be talking about the Muddy Waters job. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
This one sees us consider for a moment that someone who is an oil boss, big bad oil guy, might actually be good. Nope. No, he's not. Of course not. Tell me about that decision.
Well, I just moving, taking it a step back, I think one of the things with that episode was, you know, I mentioned before that Harry comes into the world with no skills in the world of being a professional thief or grifter, but he is in a seasoned litigator, and I think one of the things we were looking for is an opportunity to let him, you know, show that side of him. So that was one of the things in Muddy Waters' job was, you know, let's steal a tort case. I'm not sure where the decision was made to with the oil baron. I think it was at a certain point now with the show, you kind of know. We're kind of telling you who the client is and who the bad guy is, like right off the bat. And I think at this point we'd like to try and play with audience expectations a bit, because people are now familiar with it enough that I think it was an interesting way to you know, throw a curveball.
I agree. I loved it. We also got Harry's kind of backstory and his family in this episode. Was his family situation set from the get, or did that come as the writing happened?
Very much as the writing happened. I mean, I think there's a line about his daughter in the bucket job. So I think it lays out really nicely that, that we sort of tease what his relationship is with his family, and it culminates, you know, at the end of the season.
Well, you remember that thing that you thought that you snuck onto my phone to always track where I am? It works both ways.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to invade your privacy. I just was,
Being a dad. Yeah, I know. It's okay.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a conscious decision that, unlike other members of the team who were all loners, right, as we know, from the pilot, that he had a family, that, you know, he was a citizen who was a successful partner in a law firm and had a family and lost it all. So I think it was very much, you know, we wanted to have a team member like that.
Just the ambiguity around the new characters and, like, just be able to expand them. And one thing that you know, you just mentioned that you don't immediately identify the villain or the bad guy now, because we see a lot more now. There are people who are not necessarily bad people. They're just in cahoots and adjacent to people who are not so good. And I think it brings a different component for people who are watching, because it's like, oh, wait a minute. You can't just vilify someone just because where they stand on a line or on a certain issue. Because remember, Harry thought for a long time that he was okay and he was good because he was in these certain parameters. And we know now that the idea of if you're a good or bad person, it's almost like it's been expanded. It's a little bit more gray than it is necessarily black and white. I really loved that about the episodes.
That's a great point. And I think, you know, as the show goes on, you want to, you know, show the idea that, hey, under the right circumstances, good people can do bad things. Bad people can do good things. I mean, you know, you don't want to just have everything, like you said, be black and white. And I think that's a great point, that it's one of the things we were able to explore through Harry's character.
I want to talk about the characters a little bit and some of the ships, perhaps.
I told you she was going to dock. Warned you.
We have quite a few ships, that I'm boarding this season. I want to talk about coming back and having Parker and Hardison be solid. Mm-hmm. So solid that Hardison can literally be missing for most episodes, but they're still solid.
Yeah, you know, I think John Rogers, maybe when he was here, did he speak to that? Because I think he said that when he was writing some of those scenes, that it was the healthiest relationship he had written in a long time. I think that we have with, you know, Nate's death, we have somebody suffering a huge loss. I think the idea of having the two of them also, suffering a loss in their relationship would have been a lot for the show to bear. And I think we wanted to show that they'd grown and matured and they had a healthy relationship. You know, not everything has to be conflictual.
We're like questioning seeing a healthy relationship.
I know.
A healthy long-term relationship. We're like questioning it. Like, why? In a healthy space and grown, full functioning, complete adults. Why have they done the work for this whole time they've been away? What? Like, that's hilarious.
I know, that's become a kind of a revolutionary idea, right?
Yeah. It's unheard of on television.
Well, because I think what it is a lot of other dramas rely on that because it evokes a certain amount of emotion. We don't get that the emotion that's invoked from that kind of storyline in this.
That's a great point.
You know, in this show.
I think so. I mean, you know, if you spend any time in soaps, you know, nighttime soaps, that's the bread and butter of soaps. And not so much leverage, you know. The obstacles are very much external. We learn about the characters through how they overcome them. But, you know, the conflict between them, while it's always there, is not the central driving force of the show.
Time for your predictions.
Hello, my name is Kaylee, and my prediction for Leverage Redemption 1B is that Alec Hardison is going to be returning for the Muddy Waters job, since we saw in the trailer a bit of what I think is Hardison with the image on the screen of an oil rig on fire.
Now let's check in with everyone's favorite vent climber explorer, Beverly Scribe, aka Parker.
Speaking of ships,
mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about when Parker gets to really meet Miss Maria Ship and really interact with the Elliot ship.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because we get to see her really, you know, kind of being like a protective sister.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's so interesting. Tell me your thoughts on this whole situation.
Yeah, well, you know, trust doesn't come easy for these folks. So I don't trust her, you know. I'm worried that he's, like, not thinking with his head. He's, you know, getting all swept up in this beautiful woman.
Who's a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah, who's a U.S. Marshal. So what are you doing, Elliot? And I think that's the biggest thing, is she's trying to protect him from himself a little bit. She feels like he might be being a bit reckless and forgetting who he's dealing with, you know, and that we can also be, you know, in the matters of the heart, they can kind of trick you. And so I think he hasn't been fully transparent either about what's been going on. And so when I think once Parker realizes, like, oh, this is someone he actually really cares about and she really cares about him, all right, I'll loosen the grip a little bit, but don't cross me, because I'll throw you off the building. You know, she's got still got that thing. But I think that's what is so great about their dynamic, the sibling, you know, a sort of connection that they have, where it's like they have each other's back. They fight like brother and sister. But at the end of the day, she's just looking out for him, you know, but she'll protect him. She's viciously protective.
And then, you know, in the Muddy Waters job, when we see him come to Parker for romantic advice.
Yeah.
This is hilarious. The most mind-blowing thing. Parker.
Yeah.
Who cannot sense your emotion,
uh-huh.
isn't sure if you're smiling,
mm-hmm.
is the one that he goes to.
Yeah, and I think it's because they've gotten so close. It's the only thing he knows that's worked. You know, he's traveled. Our connections, they don't last that long. You know, the lives we lived before we were on the team, really, you'd meet someone and never see them again. And the connections were never everlasting, right? So it's him knowing that Parker and Hardison have found a groove and a way of working in the field that we work in, you know, our crazy lives. He's like, there's something to that. What is that? And his vulnerability in that moment is so great.
What the hell? I mean, I've always admired you and Hardison's relationship, so yeah.
Really? Oh, neat. What do I know?
I don't want to lie to her. It doesn't feel right.
Yes, I have found that, in general, lying to your partner is not good.
I can't tell her the truth.
No.
Huh? Sorry, I missed your birthday party because I was off fighting some Russian thugs and my friends were all stealing priceless artifacts, but it was for a good cause.
We've been through so much together. Yeah. You know, she trusts him and she trusts Hardison, and it's like, that didn't happen overnight. It took years to happen, right? So I think it's really sweet that they wrote that in and special, because
She's had to learn those skills. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's not something that she innately just knew. She had to learn that.
No, yeah.
And it's so funny. I was like, look at Alice up there.
Uh-huh. I know. Alice. Yes, I know. And she's had to learn it, and she's not perfect at it, but she has more of an awareness now.
I think the reason Hardison and I work so well is because he's the first person who saw me. No, he really knew me. You have to let him know you.
Some of the things I've done.
If she really cares about
I know,
you,
it should matter.
Oh, it'll matter. But being with someone, like, that person is a person.
What?
They're gonna have their own ideas and opinions about stuff. So what you do does matter, but it just can't matter more.
There's not a lot of effort and thinking when it comes to Hardison or protecting Elliot or Sophie or any of them. So she's very instinctual, right? Good and bad and all of it. So I think with this, he knows she's a straight shooter, and she's going to instinctually maybe not say it in the right way. That's like the softest way, but she's going
to
try.
Right. And she's going to say what needs to, what needs to be said.
Yeah.
We know that this show is nothing without the fans, so we got some questions for the stars. Let's check those out.
Hi, it's Kathy from St. Louis. My question is, do you have any family traits either a blame or a brag that you'd like to share with us.
Wow, that's great. You know, one of my biggest problems with as being a foodie and self-proclaimed chef, I grew up with a mom that you know, she would eat stuff off your plate. You know what I mean? She's like, you got to put that over here with this. Look at that. Oh my God, that's so. And I don't mind. And I've become a guy who shares food. You know what I mean? Like, I hate it when someone orders their own stuff. And it makes me mad. And sometimes I'll do it. I remember we were in the Philippines, and like there was this appetizer that we had one night. And the second night we came back, I said, look, I'm getting everybody this appetizer, and we're all going to share. But I'm getting one for myself. You know what I mean? So I'm actually guilty of that as well. But I just love the fact when you get like three people at the least. But you know, if you get four people and everybody orders, and you just get to share each other's food, because you should be able to taste everything. And I feel like that's a big social thing too. When you are out at a restaurant, you know what I mean? If you've got four people, say you're on a double date, and everybody goes, hey, let's choreograph this order. And when you choreograph the order, then there's a whole nother social thing that goes on for like 15 minutes, and you're having fun, and you've got a cocktail in your hand. And it's like the fish. I love that fish. Well, I don't eat this. And it's like, oh, well, then what if I got, you know, and then when it comes to the table, usually everybody eats their own stuff. But, you know, you can do. And I think that I got that from my mom, because she used to eat off all our plates and stuff like that. God bless her. And then family traits. Well, the old man was a really good golfer, and he tried to teach me how to golf for a long time. And, I'm better than I used to be. And sometimes I'm better than the people I play. And I think I got that from the old man, 'cause he was a scratch golfer. He loved the game. He loved the sport, and he tried to teach it to me at a young age, but I was too worried about rock and roll and girls. Found it out a little bit late in life, and I think that my dad taught me how to play golf, and I'll never forget that. So yeah, it's good.
Nice.
Good question.
And also, I hate when people do that too, or when they order the same exact thing.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what are you doing? I don't ever let that happen anymore. If somebody orders something that I'm getting, I just change my order.
Hey guys, my name's Nikki. I'm a huge Leverage fan. So my first question for the whole cast is, what aspect of your real life dynamics as actors do you incorporate into the show as the relationships between your characters? My second question is, what your favorite real life heists or cons are, because there's so many good examples throughout history. And based on that, what would be your ideal heist or con that you could pull off in real life if you were your Leverage character? Thanks so much for everything, and we're loving Redemption so far.
Thank you. That's great. I remember all those. I think, listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Christian Kane doesn't have a temper sometimes. I can lose my mind with the best of them, which Elliot usually does. And that's something that a lot of people sometimes, if they meet me, especially if I'm meeting some fans out, or, you know, I call them friends and family, the Caniacs. I try to be as nice as I can, man, to be honest with you. And I'm always in a good mood when I'm around them, so they never really see that. So they probably think that a lot of Elliot getting mad is acting, you know, and hopefully good acting at that. I would hope so. But it's really not. I get mad at some stuff. If the day's not going right and all that kind of stuff. So it's really not hard for me to play Elliot Spencer whenever he's, like, upset about something. And I mean, it's not, you can ask Beth, you can ask Aldous, even Gina, you know, they know that. They look at me sometimes whenever I lose it on set as Elliot Spencer, you know, when we're filming, and just kind of like that. Because sometimes I think they don't know if it's real or if it's not real. I don't know, I'm just passionate about everything, you know. It's kind of like the whole, you know, I'm not comparing myself to Conor McGregor at all, but, you know, Conor's a great guy if you don't make him mad. So it's like, it's like kind of like that. I think that's some of the character that I bring to it. That's probably the most. And then I think the other one is just the cooking. I mean, like, you know, John Rogers and Dean Devlin really ran with the whole cooking thing with Elliot, because they knew I loved to cook. And we used to have UFC fights at my house when we were doing the first Leverage. And the spread that I would have, you know, people were just in awe. I'd spend all day just making this huge spread that nobody really touched anyway, because we were drinking and I made way too much. But it was so much fun for me. I'd get up in the morning and run to the store just because I was like, you know, what am I going to make? And I think that brought that to that part of me to the character. Favorite heist? I don't know, guys, if you've seen this, but those cops, those quote-unquote fake cops that stole those paintings from Boston, that's the best heist I've ever heard of. They still haven't found them. How did you not find them? In the art world, so did they keep them? Did they resell them? It's just an unbelievable. I mean, we've mentioned it a few times in Leverage. I'll tell you a story. That's my favorite heist, and I'll tell you a story to segue into the other one. We used to have, I think it was Psych, which was a show that John Rogers knew the writer of and stuff like that. And we did an episode where we took down this guy, Beth's boyfriend at the time, in a bar, and we did it in 45 minutes, and Harson did it all from his room. And it was really fun because, a couple of weeks later, or maybe a year later, I believe it was Psych. I hope I'm not stepping out of it. But on Psych, they were like, you can't do that. That's a bottle job, and it takes, 2 days. And they said, I know a team out of Boston that did it in 45 minutes. And it was cool because they were talking about us on their show, and I thought that was cool. So that's probably my favorite heist of all time, was the one we did so they could talk about it on another show. And the heist that I would... I don't know. I mean, Gina's probably going to say the Stanley Cup for real, but I think, I don't know, it sure would be fun to, I might get myself in trouble. We'll stick with that answer for right now. I like the Boston heist, and if I could have been a part of that and disappeared forever, I might have done it, because I don't know if it's ever going to get solved, and it's got such lore to it that it's just brilliant. So there's my answer.
I feel like that question was leading to getting people in trouble by saying, "What if you were your character, what heist do you want to do?"
Yeah, exactly. And
allegedly,
I was going to say something bad, I think, just because I don't like that whole organization, but I'm probably not going to say it. No.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us for answering our questions and the fan questions.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I love this, man. This is great.
We love having you here.
This is great. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
As usual, we are heading over to Kate Rourke, who has Easter eggs from this episode in Kate Rourke's Easter Egg Corner.
In The Muddy Waters Job, we meet Harry's daughter, Becky, who is played by Noah Wiley's actual daughter. And there's a bunch of Doctor Who nerd references with Dee Tennant and Tom Baker and River Song being the names on all of the mail that comes in. And it was our first flash forward episode where we showed a theoretical what will happen when we do this plan.
Brianna will find the computer interface and hack into the primary data collection systems. While I stand watch, busting heads is required.
Why would you be covered in oil?
Because we wanted to have a fight with Elliot and oil, and we didn't figure out a way to do it any other way.
Hide your phones, lock your computers down, because we have the best hacker since Hardison to come join us, Elise Shannon, a.k.a. Brianna.
Let's talk about The Muddy Waters Job.
Okay.
Because this is the episode where Brianna goes on strike.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my favorite part of the episode.
Oh, yeah. It was a very Gen Z thing to do. I don't care. It does not sit well in my soul. So I am not going to do it. And good luck.
Right. Which for some people, is super tantrumy. But for Gen Z, I think we all know. We're walking out right now. It would take, 7-Eleven stopped selling Jolly Ranchers. Walking out right now. We do it about important stuff for sure, but, right. Done. no qualms about it, yeah.
Yeah, I get it, but this is still, a big no for me. So you can consider me officially on strike, effective immediately.
I don't even know we could go on strike.
It doesn't come up a lot.
I think that Gen Z really, is aware of the world, is aware of what's
Absolutely.
Going on in a way that I think previous generations, it took them a long time to get aware of what was happening, unless it affected them directly.
Sure.
Whereas Gen Z is this doesn't affect me directly and I'm still going to do something about it.
Absolutely. Or just moreover, this is something Gen Z is also really good about. This is something that I had to learn about. I actually had to research about, and I'm comfortable knowing that a year ago I didn't have an opinion on this thing, and now I do. And I'm okay to ride that opinion into activism or protest or, you know, XYZ. But yeah, I mean, if you want to blow it up into a comedy sketch, that's like really funny on an exaggerated scale. But it is one of our strongest suits. The idea that we don't have a problem saying yesterday I didn't know and today I do know and I feel passionately about it. And for some people, it's silly. But our parents' generation is like, unless I grew up with this thing and know it inside and out. Like,
also, the language exists for Gen Z to speak more directly to a problem and diagnose it than it's ever been before. Because we go, oh, no, that thing is wrong. Why is it wrong? I don't have the words, but I know it's wrong. And this generation now has the words and knows it's wrong.
Absolutely.
I think this is, it feels like one of the first times I've seen Gen Z portrayed on TV, but also portrayed correctly on TV.
Mm.
How's that feel?
Well, it feels great if that's what's going on. No, I mean, the best part about this show and the writing and, you know, to Dean and Mark and John's credit, like, there is a, I mean, you should have seen my audition sides. Like, there is a lot of you that you bring to it, and they're such big fans of anything that they haven't thought of or that is, you know, different, just coming. He's like, yeah, try one, you know, put that in there. Give us something, you know, like, put your mambo sauce on it, and super accepting of it. And if anything, I think that's just a credit to them. And being, I am Gen Z, so when they invite me to bring myself to something and they're not busy, you know, some other productions or whatever squashing you out or trying to make you play on the rails for something, yeah, perhaps it is more authentic. But I mean, that's the nature of the show, and that's why it's such a pleasant environment to be in, and so artistic, and so much growth and learning that took place. Like, perhaps it's just because it was me. I mean, I don't know, and I'm Gen Z, so.
B-I-N-G-O, it's time to play bingo.
We have a season 1A reference when Brianna is wearing a Spirits Ruse t-shirt. And we get Harry's backstory when we meet his daughter and the ex-wife and find out all about that situation. We also hear our Mr. Wilson. And when someone does someone else's thing, we see Harry attempts to hack.
Let's check out some great fan art from you amazing Picassos in the making.
The official Leverage Redemption After Show is part of the Electric Surge Network on Electric Now. We recommend checking out some of our other original content like Inglourious Trekspurts, The 430 Movie, and Best Movies Never Made. Finally, a very special thank you to Bill Ritter, Patrick Meany, and everyone at Electric Surge Network, our producers Natalie Michelli, and of course, Dean Devlin, without whom this show would not be possible. Thank you again to our amazing guests, and thank you to the fans who submitted some thought-provoking questions and beautiful fan art. Don't forget to
slide right into this next episode because we have more Leverage Redemption After Show for you. But until next time, you can follow us on @AfterLeverage. Yell, where can they find you at?
@YellTeagle.
I feel like you're still yelling. And you can find me at It's Felicia Michelle. But until next time,
I'm Yell Teagle.
I'm Felicia Michelle.
And this has been a very distinctive podcast.